Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Lake Tahoe, post June 15th, California's reopening day. Will the crowds come back? How will the state's reopening accelerate the region's economic recovery? In a few minutes, we'll learn about the latest economic forecast show. Plus, we'll talk to one of the owners of the Atlantis Casino and Resort in Reno about how his company is struggling to lure back workers. But first, confusion, frustration, and anger. That pretty much summed up public comments during last night's special session Cal OSHA meeting about workplace requirements for masking and distancing after June 15th. We're just days away from California's much-anticipated reopening, and employers, business owners, and even some Cal OSHA board members are more confused over what the workplace safety rules are next week. Yesterday, we had Politico policy reporter Alex Nieves to explain what he knew or what we knew of the proposed rules, but that was as of yesterday morning, and a lot has changed. Regulators are changing course themselves for the second time in about a week or so. So since Alex has been keeping tabs, he was in that meeting, that special session last night, we invited him back on to get the latest developments. Alex, thanks for coming back on with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
All right. So there's another change, of course, when it comes to masking in the workplace. What were the biggest headlines from last night?
Yeah. So the big headline is that Cal OSHA is going to try to meet the CDC recommendations. That means vaccinated workers won't need to wear masks in most situations. And until then, we will go back to our November regs. So all workers, regardless of vaccination status, are going to be wearing masks and social distancing, both indoors and outdoors. So there will be a little bit of a reversion there, but we're going towards the goal of a June 17th vote for all vaccinated workers to be maskless in most situations.
So essentially on June 15th, when we go into work, if we actually do physically walk into work, things stay how they effectively are right now and how they have been for the past, you know, 6 months or so. What happens on June 17th? And does that mean that, you know, mid-June, things could change?
Yeah, so we're looking at a June 28th to end of June, early July date for the new regs to be in place. So right now, Cal OSHA is reworking these regulations, and they will post a public proposal on Friday. That will be voted on June 17th, and that means those regs, if they pass, which we do expect at this point, will go to the Office of Administrative Law, which has 10 days to review them. And I have to check this myself. It's 10 regular days, not business days.
Oh, okay, good. Because, yeah, that obviously is longer, and we're in a holding pattern right now. When going through your reporting last night, so there are some changes when it comes to masks for vaccinated residents. It seems like we don't necessarily need masks in indoor settings, albeit for a few scenarios, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those scenarios are laid out by the CDC, and this is a recommendation for around the country, so it's not just a California thing. We're looking at transit hubs, so airports, train depots, bus depots, hospitals, indoors at K-12 schools, situations where, for the most part, people aren't there voluntarily. That's a big part of it. If you have to be somewhere, like in a prison or in a hospital, and you have no choice, it's likely that you will still be required to wear a mask. And these are also places where you just have a lot of people moving around and it's hard to check vaccination status.
Does Cal OSHA also regulate schools across the state? And did they discuss that last night?
Yeah, it's a tricky topic. I know that discussion has come up in these meetings, especially around college campuses, a professor who's in a classroom. What are they going to do? It seems like for K-12 schools, at least, the California Department of Public Health is regulating them. I honestly wish I had a better answer because it's a confusing issue and one that the Cal OSHA board members are trying to figure out in real time. But based on the regs we're seeing from both the state and from Cal OSHA, it seems that CDPH is handling the school masking requirements.
Well, as of much things over the past, you know, 15 months, it's a fluid situation. What
exactly
happens if you're not vaccinated? Any changes?
No changes if you're not vaccinated. Again, it's a really confusing situation where you're going to have the potential of one worker in an office space who needs to wear a mask and all of their colleagues are maskless. And there are questions about how this is going to play out, because just like the regulations for the general public, all you need to do is self-attest that you are vaccinated. It's unlikely that an employer is going to be asking to see your vaccination card. So it's going to be on the honor system, whether or not an employee is honest and says, I am unvaccinated, I am going to wear a mask. That's really the situation right now for both the general public and workers going forward. It'll be fluid and it'll be interesting, but it seems difficult for a lot of people, because honestly, when we got our vaccination cards, we weren't told to keep them, you know?
Right. And they're kind of like cardboard. So you could also, we're human, we could lose them, we could damage mm-hmm. them and all of that. For listeners who missed yesterday's show, can you just get us up to speed? It's been kind of a yo-yo tumultuous, 7 days or so when it comes to workplace safety requirements.
Yeah, topsy-turvy to say the least. So on June 3rd, the Cal OSHA Standards Board, which is fairly independent from the regulatory making body of Cal OSHA, they voted initially to reject a proposal that would have required vaccinated workers to wear a mask if everyone in a room, or if there was at least one person in a room that wasn't unvaccinated. So a vaccinated worker's masking situation was going to be controlled by their unvaccinated coworkers. They then turned around after initially rejecting that and accepted it, because they did not want to go back to the November regs, where it was what we've been living under, where everyone is masked. So there's a weird regulatory issue here at Cal OSHA, where they only have two opportunities to revise these regulations. After they've done it twice, they are locked in. So what they did was rescind the June 3rd. That revision is just off the table, and it still gives them the opportunity to revise the regulations again down the line. So that's why we're going back to the November regs for a brief period of time before we move forward, if that makes sense. It's a little confusing.
Yeah, and I would imagine for some people, there's also just kind of a little bit of confusion over the fact that, Cal OSHA had this date circled on the calendar, for months now. We've all been talking mm-hmm. about June 15th, and we're talking about November regs. Why has this process taken so long?
Yeah, so the actual process of writing the regs on Cal OSHA side, first we need to remember that they came up with these November regs in record time. For a regulatory body to write a new standard in a couple months is just incredible. So they have been working on new regs, and they have been under the impression that the state would be looking towards a June 15th lifting of mask mandates. But the CDC has been pretty fluid in developing these. They still haven't given guidance on schooling, for example. So they were waiting for some more clarity from the federal government and from the state. I think while we know that June 15th was going to be the opening, we didn't know exactly what the masking mandate would look like. And we really found out some of the details on yesterday.
Right. Yeah, Dr. Galley. Yeah, that's right. And when it comes to the governor, where does he stand? And I guess public health officials as well, Dr. Galley, where do they stand on kind of where Cal OSHA is right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there hasn't been any open criticism of the June 3rd decision, and hasn't been a statement yet on the vote yesterday. But it seems, reading between the lines, that they weren't happy that Cal OSHA was going in a different direction on masking. That's why we had the meeting yesterday. That's why CDPH wrote a letter to the Cal OSHA Standards Board. It's clear that they want workplaces to be similar to the general public, where vaccinated people can expect to not have to wear a mask. Hmm.
I imagine June 17th is marked on your calendar, Alex. You will be tuning in again.
I'm hoping this meeting will be under the 9.5 hour mark that we had on June 3rd. That's all I can hope for at the moment.
Politico policy reporter Alex Nieves, thank you again for joining us on Insight and sorting through, such a fluid situation. I'm sure we'll have you back on.
Yeah, happy to be here June 17th.
All right. Yeah. Me as well. Up next, how does a $1,400 bonus sound it come back to work? As the Tahoe-Reno area tries to get back to normal, the struggles, challenges, and perks are being offered to hire back staff to pre-pandemic levels. You can join the conversation. Email us at insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Well, as we've been talking about, just days away from California's reopening date of June 15th, many of the restrictions we've grown accustomed to over the past 15 months are about to go away. Places like Lake Tahoe have already seen a resurgence of visitors over the past several months as the vaccine rollout increased. Memorial Day was busy, although not like in years past, and July 4th is just a few weekends away. Tahoe, though, is still struggling in ways that might not be so obvious when you visit for a weekend. There's a shortage of workers. Help wanted signs are posted in restaurants, bars, hotels, and there's a serious housing problem for long-term residents. Joining us to discuss the post-pandemic future of Lake Tahoe is Heidi Hildrum. She's the CEO of Tahoe Prosperity Center. Welcome, Heidi.
Good morning, Vicki. Thanks for having me.
Well, the Tahoe Prosperity Center puts out an economic forecast update for the area. What are the main bullet points when it comes to Tahoe's summer outlook?
Well, when we looked at it last summer, we did a post-pandemic economic outlook, and we envisioned a couple different scenarios, sort of a rapid recovery scenario and a more conservative view of recovery. And we're actually hitting our targets for that rapid recovery. So our sales tax numbers, our tourism occupancy tax numbers, all of which supports our local governments around the lake, are up and about at where we expected them to be under the rapid recovery scenario. So what that means is that lots of folks are coming to the lake, and we expect this summer visitation numbers to be about on par with last summer. Even during the pandemic last summer, Tahoe was one of those places that it was easy to get to. So we expect heavy visitation again this summer.
I would imagine on the one hand, that's good news, but there still are some challenges facing the Tahoe area. What are the main ones that the Tahoe Prosperity Center is focusing on?
The primary one is that we are just too dependent on tourists to drive our economy. And unfortunately, that is typically lower wage seasonal jobs. It's not year round employment. You might have a job for the summer for 4 months, and maybe you can link that with a job in the winter for 4 months, but it's typically not year round. It's very low, wages with uncertain hours. And that's challenging for our local workforce. And the pandemic, it just really highlighted that when we are so dependent on tourism to the tune of about 2/3 of our economy, we're not sustainable and not stable. So we're looking at ways to diversify. We know we'll always be a tourism economy, but we maybe don't need to be 62% dependent on tourism.
I was reading an article in the Tahoe Daily Tribune just about a few days ago. The Village Ace Hardware in Incline Village, they had to reduce their hours from 7 days a week to 6 days a week due to lack of staff availability. I would imagine this isn't an isolated issue across the region.
No, we're finding reduced hours at a lot of our businesses. We're finding reduced days, as the hardware store pointed out. There are a number of places that are really struggling to keep their workforce that they've had and to hire the seasonal numbers that we usually have a need for in the summer, for example.
When it comes to housing, cost of living is high. And when it comes to relying on a tourism economy and the hospitality industry, you know, the pay not may not match what the rent needs to be. And, right. And we've reported on this before when it comes to long-term renters having to move out of the county or across state lines to be able to work in the Tahoe area. What's being done to close that gap, to remedy that?
Well, the good news is that all the jurisdictions around Lake Tahoe, and remember, we've got two states and five governments, so it's a complicated place to do work in, but everyone is really committed to accelerating the housing development that we need for local workers. And that's not just building new housing, it's renovating the old housing that we have that's been sitting empty, or some of the old motel properties that could be, you know, cleaned up and redeveloped into apartments, small apartments. So all of that is happening up here at the lake. And the problem is just that it's not happening fast enough. We do need to move at lightning speed, and we're not known for that up here in Tahoe. So we've still got some work to do. And I know your next speaker is going to talk about the draw of a job in Reno with a big signing bonus. That's pulling workers from up here, because if they're living down in Carson Valley, for example, in Nevada, they don't need to drive up to the lake to make money anymore. They can just drive 20 minutes over to Nevada and make higher wages. So that's also complicating things, at least up here at the lake. So our businesses are really having to think about how they incentivize and keep their workforce.
What are the population trends showing you? Because they have changed over the last year, obviously, with remote work.
Yeah, you know, it's I look at the population trends in sort of these 5 and 10 year time frames. So we did see a slight increase in the 2018 to 2019. We still don't have the local 2020 data yet, although we expect that we will have an increase. And yet nowhere near our high of the year 2000 when we had 60,000 residents. So we still only have about 54,000 residents in Lake Tahoe. So we have room to grow. The interesting thing that we found when we did our data update just a couple of months ago is that the school districts around Lake Tahoe did not see an increase. So we think that the population that has moved in is either older, 65 and older, so their kids are already out of school, or that some of the new residents left their kids in online school in whatever school district they came from, most likely, you know, the Bay Area or the Los Angeles area, and they just kept their kids in online school. So we actually saw a decrease in school enrollment, which it's interesting.
When I think about the past year, you know, I think there's a lot of us have been reevaluating our life and our balance. And what I'm hearing when it comes to the Tahoe area is that there's a struggle to find enough workers. And then you are expecting kind of at least to be on par with a robust amount of visitors to the Tahoe area. Do you think that's going to kind of strain the workforce that already exists there, the people that work in restaurants and work in the tourism industry? Because anecdotally, there's been some conversations about work-life balance and kind of the pressure mm-hmm. of customer service.
You know, Vicki, my husband and I drove from the North Shore to the South Shore last Saturday, and we stopped in at the Bridge Tender restaurant there in Tahoe City. It was a beautiful day. It was, you know, we wanted to sit outside with the dogs out and have a drink and a nice lunch. And when I walked up to the hostess to let her know that we wanted to put our name down for a table, she looked so exhausted. And I just felt so bad for our frontline staff workers all around the lake, at restaurants, at retail shopping centers. I'm about to go to a meeting and see a friend for coffee. And I think that our existing workforce that lives here is they will be tired. These ups and downs of heavy visitation periods are really going to start to strain our local workers. And again, that's exactly why we at the Tahoe Prosperity Center want to create a more stable economy that is year round and not so dependent on these, you know, highs and lows of it's sort of a feast or famine mentality of the economy. And so if we can sort of balance that out, then we hope that, you know, a more year round stable economy of longer term residents who live here year round and less seasonality, you know, we'll always have those bumps of July 4th weekend, for example, that's coming up here. But it won't be to the point where we're exhausting our poor, you know, 19-year-old hostess, you know, in the first 3 weeks she's on the job.
In the meantime, I mean, before we let you go, I know you're hopping into a meeting. How do you think the summer is going to go?
I think this summer, again, is going to be busy and about on par with previous years. I looked at the Memorial Day lodging numbers before today, so I would have a sense of how it sort of compared, because this Memorial Day up in Tahoe was just so beautiful. The weather was perfect and sunny, and a lot of Memorial Days up here are rainy and cold. And so the numbers, it turns out, they were about almost at 100% occupancy on that Saturday of the long weekend, but only between about 70 and 90% that Friday and Sunday night. So what that tells you is that even on a lovely, you know, beautiful holiday weekend up here, we didn't really see any bigger numbers at Memorial Day. It was about average with a normal Memorial Day. And so I think we're going to see that throughout the summer. I think we're going to have, you know, the heavy visitation during July 4th that we typically get. And then we'll sort of, you know, it'll be crowded at the beaches and at the trailheads. And people will just need to be mindful of you know, taking their trash with them when they leave. And you know, hopefully we'll do better at cleaning things up this summer, because last summer was weird with the pandemic and, you know, beaches and trailheads closed. So everything will be open June 15th, June 17th. I was so confused 15th. By that. So thank you for covering all that.
You and lots of other people, actually, Heidi.
Exactly. So technically, and Nevada is open as well. So hopefully we can spread everybody out a little bit more and it won't feel too crowded.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And also, we should all just have patience for as you said, the frontline staff that are shouldering a lot.
Oh, 100%, Vicki. Please tip your servers well when you come up here. Be patient and be kind. It's, you know, it's such a spectacular place to visit. And we don't want to, you know, be negative towards anyone who comes up here for a vacation. But just know that you might have to wait a little while extra. You might have a little, you know, might have to take a little while to get your table. But you're in beautiful Lake Tahoe and, you know, enjoy.
Heidi Hildrum is the CEO of the Tahoe Prosperity Center. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
Well, you're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about the Reno Tahoe area and the anticipation for this summer as California reopens in just a few days. We're now joined by David Farahi. David is the Chief Operating Officer of Monarch Casino and Resort, which owns two properties. One of them is in Colorado, but the more familiar one to our listeners is likely Atlantis Casino and Resort in Reno. David, thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Vicki.
Well, you operate a casino and resort, so you really have a good read on the economy, as much of what you offer is based on disposable income. What are you seeing these days in Reno?
We're seeing a lot of people very excited about getting out and about, going to entertainment venues, coming to the casino, enjoying restaurants, enjoying a hotel stay, going to our world-class spa, and playing in the casino. You know, there's a lot of pent-up demand. A lot of people saved some money during the pandemic, and they're excited to get back out and have some fun.
What has the last year been like for Atlantis and Reno economically, and what are the prospects for a mild, moderate, or robust rebound this year?
It's been a very challenging 15 months, Vicki. And, you know, our Atlantis team, we have about 1,500 team members at the Atlantis in Reno. And our team has just worked so hard and gone through so many challenges and so much unknown, and really just Dedication. You know, Atlanta's been around for many decades, and over a third of our management team has been with us for over a decade, which you don't really find so much in the hospitality industry today. And it's that hard work and dedication from our team that really got us through the tough times. As you probably know, casinos don't even have locks on their doors. We never close. So when we had 24 hours notice to close the casino back in March of 2020, that was challenging. And our team pulled together and got it done. And we spent that time investing in the facility. We actually had zero layoffs. We had no layoffs in 2008 during the Great Recession. We had no layoffs during the 3 months that we were closed by the state. We actually were able to pay our team members 2 weeks into the closure. Everyone got to keep their benefits through the closure. That coming out of the closure, I think that made us closer. It made us stronger, and has allowed us to kind of thrive as we've come out of this pandemic.
Hiring, I would imagine, is still a big challenge. How is hiring going? Are you at staffing levels that you would like to see currently?
Not in the slightest. Staffing is our biggest challenge by far today. We're looking to hire over 100 people right now. And it's kind of been that way for the last several months. I'll tell you, we're doing a lot of apologizing to our guests. You know, we pride ourselves on a high level of guest service every day. And right now during busy periods, we're not able to deliver every single time because we're so short staffed. You can imagine if you're missing 100 team members, you can't exactly deliver the level of service that you want. And so hiring has most definitely been a challenge, and we're raising wages to try to attract people. A room attendant, someone who goes in the rooms and cleans the rooms after somebody has left, we're offering $19 an hour to start for that position. An inspector that inspects the rooms after the fact is $21 an hour. We have cooks coming in at $18 an hour for our restaurants. So these are wages that are much higher than what they were 2 or 3 years ago, much higher than they were 2 or 3 years ago. But that's kind of our commitment to the team and to guest service. And we need to staff up so that we can take care of our guests the way that we want.
And you're also hiring or offering hiring bonuses, correct?
We are. Certain positions have hiring bonuses at each property. The really exciting positions, some of the tip positions, because business levels are so high and there's so much volume, the tip positions are just out of this world. I mean, just making really good money as restaurant server or dealer or, you know, any of the tip positions.
What are you hearing from people as they decide whether or not to work? What does it come down to? Safety, money, time off, flexibility, balance? I mean, anecdotally, we've been hearing about work-life balance. I guess what's most important to people, prospective employees, when you're chatting with them?
Look, I don't presume to know what the most important thing is for folks. I know some people have said, you know, right now childcare is still an issue and that they haven't been able to get back to work because they need childcare. At our Colorado property, we opened our resort in November, and we had job fairs every month, November through April, every single month. And there was 1 month in there where it wasn't clear whether federal unemployment benefits were going to be extended or not. And we saw a significant increase in the number of people who showed up and applied for jobs in that one brief period versus all the other periods. So that might be playing a factor as well. But I speak with a lot of business leaders, both in Nevada and in Colorado, in our hospitality industry, but in other industries as well. I have not spoken to a single business leader in either state in the last 3 months that is not having a hard time hiring. Everyone I'm speaking to is having a hard time hiring, and they have many, many job openings. And I've heard over and over again, this is the most challenging labor market they've ever experienced.
In an interview you did just not too long ago with NPR's Marketplace, you talked about not having been able to find that silver bullet to get people back to work. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. You know, in as much as we're trying to hire 100 people at Atlantis in Reno, we've had to hire 700 people in Colorado, and we're still about 350 people short here. And so what I meant by my comment around the silver bullet is we've tried, you know, dozen plus different strategies, signing bonuses, relocation bonuses, referral bonuses, job fairs, advertising campaigns on regular media, advertising campaigns on digital media. We've tried many, many different strategies, and there's no one strategy that has been successful. There was no silver bullet. We've had to kind of just chip away at this challenge with a lot of different strategies and, frankly, a lot of hard work from the entire team.
Do you think the workforce has kind of changed permanently post-COVID?
I think it's too early to know the answer to that question, Vicki. I think there are a lot of studies out there that say that when somebody has not worked for a year or more, there are kind of permanent adjustments in their desire to work. I think there are lots of studies around that. Maybe people not working because of COVID will cause different changes in people's behavior. I'm just looking at studies based on history. So I don't think we know what the long-term ramifications of COVID unemployment for a year plus is going to do. I wish I did, but it's a very, very important question for the future of this country, in my opinion.
It's an overarching question mark as it stands now. Over this past, 15 months or so, what kind of improvements have you made to the property, or even during the 3 months last year when Atlantis was closed?
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I think really differentiates our company and the Atlantis to the rest of regional gaming and frankly hospitality. You know, we went into this the COVID closure with one of the best balance sheets, if not the best, in all of the gaming industry, which means that we didn't have a lot of debt compared to the profits that we generate. And so we spent those 3 months investing in the facility. We closed down one of our restaurants, Cafe Alfresco, completely gutted it to the bolts, and built a brand new restaurant called the Red Bloom Asian Kitchen, which opened late last year and has already become very popular. We shut down our lobby bar and completely gutted that and opened a brand new atrium lounge and bar at the Atlantis. We actually have done some work on our conveyance systems, our escalators, elevators. Right now, the top two floors of the hotel are shut down and completely getting redone to brand new mega suites, the best suites Reno has ever seen. So, you know, we took advantage of the closure to do some work that is very disruptive to the guest experience, so that when guests did and have decided to come back, they're like, wow, there's new things to do at the Atlantis. This is beautiful. This is delicious. And so it's been great to invite our guests back. And I think that they, for the most part, have been really pleasantly surprised by our commitment to trying to make things even better than before we closed. You know, we were the only property in Northern Nevada that had their buffet open for a long period of time. And I think we're still the only ones that have our buffet open 7 days a week.
Well, we know how heavily your property advertises in Northern California. I just drive along I-80 and I'll see a billboard. What kind of traffic are you seeing for those of us on the west side of the Sierra?
You know, ever since we reopened back last June, I think there were a lot of Californians who were excited to escape the more rigorous restrictions in California and get to Nevada. And then today, I think there are a lot of Californians who have been able to get vaccinated. And we're also seeing that there are more comfortable. The older demographic is more comfortable coming to a casino, and we're excited to welcome them.
What events that are back on that you hope will lure tourists back to Reno? I know you have, just for one, like the Chalk Art Festival, for example.
Yeah, I am personally very excited about our Chalk Art Festival, July 9th, the 11th. You know, Reno has a lot of different summer festivals, and this is our fourth year doing the Chalk Art Festival. We actually already have over 100 artists that are signed up for this festival. It's just a lot of really beautiful work. You only get to see it if you come those 3 days, because it gets washed away on Monday morning. So really excited about the art, the music. We're going to have a lot of different live performances. And it's an easy, you know, obviously an easy drive coming over the hill to come and see all that beautiful work by those artists. So we weren't able to have the Chalk Art Festival last year because of COVID. But we're really excited to get it back as part of Art Town this year, July 9th, the 11th. And if we already have over 100 artists, I expect we'll have maybe even, you know, close to 200 by the time we launch. Just beautiful, beautiful work.
And what exactly is Hot August Nights?
Hot August Nights is the largest classic car show in America. And it's been going on in Reno for many decades. It's kind of Reno's biggest, most popular summer festival. If you like to come and see old classic muscle cars or Model Ts, even it's a great citywide festival. People come from literally all around the country to show off their cars, see all other people's cars, and it's a lot of fun in Reno.
Finally, David, before we let you go, you know, just talking about the immense hiring challenges that you and other companies are facing, with the existing staff that you have, are you concerned also that they're shouldering a lot? We were just chatting with the Tahoe Prosperity Center and kind of burnout. And what are you doing to mitigate that?
Yeah, it is a real concern. I spend a fair amount of my time on the floor speaking to our team members. And as you were hearing from your previous guests, I mean, frontline team members are tired. You know, it's kind of gone from one challenge to the next. Our frontline team members, for example, were tasked with ensuring people were compliant with the mask regulations. That's not a fun job. Having to ask somebody over and over again to put their mask up for 6 months and getting yelled at and sometimes sworn at, and it's not a fun experience. And so that was emotionally exhausting. And now, being so short-staffed, for sure, our team members are working hard because, you know, with our team, they're on our team because they enjoy giving a great experience to our guests. And I know that a lot of our team members also get frustrated when you're so short-staffed and you can't deliver the guest experience just because you don't have enough time. There's just too many people. There's too many things to do. So our commitment to our team is we are out there doing everything we can. It is our number one priority to hire, to help ease that burden. And we say thank you a lot. You know, we say thank you to our team members for shouldering that extra load during these challenging times. And I'll end with the same comment I started with. Our 2,500 team members have gone through a lot over the last 15 months, and God bless them. I mean, that's the only thing that has made us successful, kind of the hard work and dedication of the 2,500 team members that we have, because it has been challenging.
David Farahi is the Chief Operating Officer of Monarch Casino and Resort, as well as Atlantis, which is in Reno. Thank you so much for your time and perspective.
Thank you, Vicki.
Still ahead, One Stitch for Every Refugee Around the World. An emotional exhibit of art activism opens this weekend in Sacramento. The founder of 25 Million Stitches joins us to discuss why she was inspired to do this and why so many people from around the world decided to join in. You can join the conversation too. Email us at insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag #AskInsight. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Refugees forced from their homes, whether it be due to political conflict, natural disasters, war, the reasons are really numerous. We hear and see the headlines every day. This weekend, an art exhibit is opening in Sacramento, designed to share solidarity and compassion for the millions of people around the world who find themselves being uprooted from their homes. The project is called 25 Million Stitches, One Stitch, One Refugee. It was started by Sacramento artist Jennifer Kim Son and opens this weekend at the Verge Center for the Arts. The exhibit runs through August. Jennifer, thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on Insight. I'm thrilled to be on your program to share our art activism project.
Yeah, I was just watching before we started Insight in the Zoom channel. You actually showed a piece of art and it was just so striking. And I'm excited to share it with listeners. Can you just start off by sharing with us how this art exhibit came to be and what exactly people will see when they visit?
To be honest, I was... It helped that I was so naive about the scope of this project. Initially, I was going to stitch 25 million stitches on my own using a quilting machine. And after 3 days working 9 hours, I broke the machine and I only had about 40 feet of banner made. So I had to reevaluate and do something that I've never done before, which is to reach out to the general public to collaborate on this project of collecting 25 million stitches. And I changed it to hand-sewn stitches rather than machine-stitched stitches. And against all odds and my utter amazement, we were able to collect and surpass collecting 25 million stitches, the number which coincides with the global refugee count by UN Refugee Agency when we started the project.
What a serendipitous obstacle you encountered, because by in turn having others help by hand stitching, I mean, this really became an expression of solidarity for refugees.
Yes, well, there's the global pandemic that happened in the middle. When we started in May 2019, and in the seventh month, which was January of 2020, we barely had 2 million stitches collected. At that time, Verge committed to having a show by June 2020, so we were 4 months to go with 23 million stitches to go. So it seemed at that point that it was just not going to happen. We even thought about just hanging blank panels and show people how huge a number this is and how impossible a task it is. But unbeknownst to me, there was all these interest for the project coming to a critical mass. And within 4 months, we were able to collect all 25 million hand-sewn stitches.
Wow, and that is incredible. And that is really just such a short amount of time.
Yes.
What lessons, and I guess just the fact that people came together in such an incredible way. I mean, there are participants mainly from California to 49 states, 33 countries, 6 continents. I mean, this really is just a beautiful movement in such a short amount of time. What lessons will people take away after visiting this exhibit?
I think this is a all sensory experience, you would feel the hush of silence because we are hanging these 16 feet banners in a huge space. It's 70 feet across by 26 feet. We can't even hang all of 2,200 panels because we have just too many. You will walk through the corridors where you can see individual panels, all of them a narrative of an expression of love, compassion, goodwill, solidarity for the refugees. So I think it's a visual and textural collection of what 25 million looks like. That's one part of it, but it's so much more. So I hope that all of you who are listening to the program can make it to the show and share it with your communities and keep coming to the show.
You know, when I think of stitching, I think of repair. You know, you're fixing mm-hmm. something, and this is art activism. So can you explain what exactly an art activist is?
I think it's championing a cause in a different way as other activism. And I would say that the difference is that it's sustained and perhaps solitary, and it's very deliberate. It's different from going to a public march because you are engaged for a much longer period of time. And I think that's so important when we are trying to address such huge challenge like climate change and refugee crisis. This is something that we all have to solve together. And it's something that we can't be distracted by, daily news headlines and sound bites.
Yeah. When I was looking at the website, I was drawn to one image, I believe it was in Vancouver, and it was the sewing circle in the chain link mosque. And that was one of the places of participants that are contributing to this art exhibit. Can you also talk to us about that and maybe a few others pieces of the more than 2,000 you have that stand out to you and touch you?
Well, pretty early on in the project, I was approached by two college students from Lithuania. They wanted to participate in the project. And I think they were surprised that when they approached their elderly population, where stitching is part of their national pastime, they came across a lot of resistance. They said, "What do we have anything to do with refugees?" And the girls would say, "Look, we have this history of being invaded by every foreign enemy, and it's no different. We may not have to leave our home, but the suffering is the same." So they went door to door and ended up sending us 68 stunning panels. They had their local exhibit. I think you can find that in our website. And the other community that really touched me was Refugee Resettlement Center in Blackburn, United Kingdom. They asked for us to send 80 muslin panels. And we were surprised how much that cost, not just the shipping, but to go through the customs. What happened was we have not received any panels back, but we have heard from the director that the resettlement service takers were so afraid by the time they got to the resettlement center. They needed this community, but they weren't able to open up among themselves. But through the stitching, they were finally able to share their stories and connect. And that, for me, was much more important than getting any panels stitched from them.
Yeah. I mean, just hearing about that, I would imagine it's going to be a very emotional opening for you, Jennifer. It's been
yes,
quite the journey.
Yes, thank you. It has been so humbling to see all these people around the globe putting so much time and love into each panel. And I hope that when you come, you'll feel that pulse of life and participants having put their lives into these projects.
Well, the project is called 25 Million Stitches, One Stitch, One Refugee, and it was started by Sacramento artist Jennifer Kimson, and it opens this weekend at the Verge Center for the Arts in Sacramento and runs through August. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to producers Cynthia Lopez and Kyle McKinnon, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is James Tejeda. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. And I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here on Monday.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.